Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Devo Days for Lives in France. Tonight we'll be interviewing three-time Daytime Emmy writer Tom Casciello. Tom just recently won his third Emmy writing for The Young and the Restless. Tom has previously written for Days for Lives in 2007, One Life to Live, and he also won two Emmys for writing for As the World Turns, and Tom is currently writing for the WWE. You can follow him on Facebook and on Twitter. So hi Tom, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Great. Good. And we also have Anna and Marianne here tonight, too.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you
it's
so much for joining
Woo.
Us.
Hey, you've got three hoochies here. I mean, come on. What?
Is there any other way to spend a Wednesday night than this?
Right, exactly.
I don't think so.
Nope.
Nope.
Oh. Tell us about your Emmy night.
Oh my God! It was
winter, and yeah.
And so you heard my hour, or you read my hour of snark before it happened. Yeah, you know, I got to be honest. I know every like nominee and winner always says this. I really didn't think we were going to get it. No offense to Weinar at all. I just I thought World Turns had it for their final episode. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
And the way my story worked was I live in New York, but Weinar is down in California, and I would fly out a lot. But for various reasons, I hadn't seen anybody from Weinar in person since last fall. So when I left the show, it was all done over email and phone calls, and I really wanted to see everybody one last time. And so I decided, you know what, no matter what happens, I'm definitely going to the Emmys this year because I just want to see everybody in person, you know, under one roof one last time and say goodbye to people and, you know, thank people for everything they've done for me for, you know, the last 10 years and just kind of have one last hurrah. So that was my only purpose in going to the Emmys this year, is just to see everybody and have a blast. So to actually, when they said The Young and the Restless, I had my partner came with me and he was sitting next to me and I, for like 20 minutes beforehand, I was tweeting like, this show sucks, oh my God, all the Vegas commercials, I'm so over this, when can I go to the party? And then they said The Young and I literally screamed, no, at the top of my lungs and my partner went, yes, and he had tears in his eyes and we went running up the stage and it was such a way, this is selfish, I know, but it was such a way to leave the industry, you know, like it was such a great way to go out.
Right.
So it was a wonderful night and just everybody was in such a good mood and everybody I saw from the other shows too. It was just, you know, there was a, not to be a downer, but you know, everybody kind of knows that we're not sure what's going to happen with the televised Emmys next year.
Right.
So I think a lot of people
right.
really went into this like, you know what, we're just going to go and have a good time and just enjoy being around each other and enjoy getting dressed up
Aww.
Again. And just, you know, we're not going to be sad and we're not going to cry. We're just going to go and just party all night, just have a good time. And so, I feel like from my end of things, the mission was accomplished.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because hard as more and more shows get canceled. It's like, it's just, you know, it's nice that you guys had that time together and everything in case they don't have a big deal next year and everything.
Exactly. And it's, and you know, this is my opinion, but I'm not so sure I want another televised one after the last one. I think I know the fans want to see it. I know the fans really want to see it, but if it's a choice between, like, the Vegas commercial or, you know, a non-televised lunch,
like,
I'm,
Vegas,
you know.
Vegas, the biggest product placement ad ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I mean, you know, but then again, you say, well, it's our one time of the year to actually get to see these, you know, I mean, there's not a talk show anymore that's really dedicated to the soaps or anything. So it's
no,
like one of the few times, other than when, if we get to interview them or see them at Dave Days or something, it's one of the few times that we actually get to see the actors, you know, and, you know, others there. To, you know, see them kind of in the, as their real selves, if you will. Maybe
right.
dressed up version of their real self. So yeah, I mean, even though you just kind of fast forward through some of the Vegas stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's how we felt. That's how we felt, too.
So you were glad to see all these people. Was there anyone you really, like, tried to avoid or didn't want to see? You don't have to answer that.
Not really. Honestly, I'm a pretty easygoing guy, and I always tell people I can count on one hand. I've worked in daytime since 1998, and I can count on one hand the number of people that I really don't care to see again. Like, if the number is really small considering all the
That's
people
cool.
that I've worked
That's
with.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, it's the most people I've worked with I just love, and I really have learned so much from, and even the ones who were tougher bosses and not necessarily my friends, I still really admired and respected and loved working with. There really wasn't anything. I don't know. I kind of walked into the Emmys like, I'm leaving all that baggage behind. Like, I'm not here to kind of resurrect, you know, to like reopen
right,
old wounds
right.
or resurrect rivalries. I just didn't want to do any of it. I really
awesome.
Just wanted to go
no.
and really just, yeah. I didn't really
all
avoid
positive.
Anyone.
That's
it was
cool.
all positive, exactly. Exactly. And if anything was started to veer towards not positive, I just walked away. I just said, I'm not doing this tonight. Like, I have no interest in, like, yeah, I didn't want to gossip. I didn't want to talk about, you know, who was doing awful things to who. I didn't want any part of it.
So did the writers really get along with the actors? Or talk to them? Or
you know, yeah,
their,
for the most
their
part.
Feedback, or do they really
yeah,
listen?
I mean, it depends. I mean, it's a loaded question because it really depends on the writer and the actor. You know, there are actors who will come to the writers and have nothing.
Were you willing to do that? Were you willing to
oh,
do
always.
That?
Always. Always. I
to,
love
like, the character history
I love about,
and because I think
oh,
the
yeah,
actors
yeah.
know the characters the best. And
oh yeah,
family.
I love talking to the actors. I told this to try once before. You have to kind of be careful because some actors, you know, will come to you with ideas about like the good of the show, and like other actors will come and be like, I have this storyline where four women fall in love with me, and I'm like, oh, we're not writing a story where four women fall in love with you. I'm sorry,
yeah.
you know, four women like half
and
a day fall in love with them, and I'm like, no. So you got to kind of be careful, you know. But you know, you can tell right away the actors who come to you and say, like, this, you know, I love this. Can I add this? Can I take this line out? And you can tell that it's not them micromanaging, that they really are doing it for the good of the show and the good of the fans. And,
right.
you know, and I love hearing that. I love collaborating. That's why I like this more than writing a screenplay, because I feel like soaps were much more collaborative. You know, you're working with a team of writers and producers and actors and, you know, people in the different departments, hair and makeup and set design, and you just feel like you're part of a bigger puzzle, which I love.
Yeah. Because I've heard some writers take offense to, like, somebody, like, even challenging what they write or questioning.
Absolutely, and some writers do. Yeah. Some writers do. And there were some head writers I worked for that basically said, like, stop asking me why you're writing this and just write it.
Okay.
You know?
And if you do a question, they'll kill you off,
of,
you know.
Yeah, kick and tie and don't ask why kind of thing.
Yeah, like, this is just the story. This is the way it is. Like, stop arguing with us. So, in that case, you just, you know, you do it. Like, that's unfortunately my job. That's what I get paid to do. I mean, of course, there are some battles that I will fight. But, you know, sometimes you just have to learn to shut up to keep your job the next day.
Oh, well, I love following you on Twitter, and we always have Twitter recommendations,
yes.
so give your Twitter name, just pull it out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Tommy Cass, it's TOMMIECAS, and I love, you know, I'm not on as much as I used to be because of the new job and everything, but I try to be on as much as possible. I love still talking to the soap fans and the fans of everything. Like, I don't just talk about soaps. I talk about books and movies and politics and everything.
Yeah,
no,
I love following you. It's fun.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah,
I feel like it's a great way to kind of keep in touch with what's going on, because I do feel like a lot of us either live in, you know, New York or L.A., and we kind of, like, forget about who we're writing for. We get so caught up in writing for the network and writing for our executive producer and writing for our head writer that we kind of forget, you know, who the fans really are and, you know, what they're into. And I'm out of touch sometimes in New York City. Yeah, so I really feel like, you know, when I started doing the blog, you know, in 2007 and then later with Facebook and Twitter, I just felt like this is such a great way for me to kind of, like, step out of my normal life of, you know, subways in New York City and the city that never sleeps and everything and be like, oh, wait, like, these are the men and women that I write for, you know, and this is what they're interested in and this is what they like and this is what they don't like. And this is a great way to kind of open up that dialogue with them without kind of overstepping bounds with the show, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I kept doing it.
Yeah.
So everybody, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I tend to ramble, sorry.
No, that's okay. You have the topic of fans. When it comes to writing soaps, how much do they pay attention to the message boards and the websites and the blogs? What fans are liking and not liking?
You know, again, that depends on the show. It depends on the writer. It depends on the head writer. I mean, I can tell you there are certainly a lot of staff writers, breakdown and script writers out there who do kind of lurk on the boards. They never post or anything, but they do lurk, and they do read what people are saying. You know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the complaints that we read are things that we have very little control over, the lower-level writers, I mean. You know, there are things that sometimes we even agree with, but unfortunately, it's just nothing we can do anything about. you know, and again, there's also you have to kind of you know, feel around. If 100 different people are saying 100 different things, that's certainly their opinion, and they have the right to their opinion. But you can't, you know, listen to every single person that's saying a different thing. However, if 100 people are saying the exact same thing. Right, but if 100 people are saying the exact same thing, somebody needs to start listening. You know, like if it's unanimous across the board, this isn't about one person's opinion. This is about we're doing something wrong.
Right.
Like, for example, the Taylor Ejik thing on Days of Our Lives right now. Everybody hates it pretty much. I don't know anybody who likes it.
Right.
So they're
unfortunately
getting rid of that. But the part we've discussed this with Sherry Anderson before. I think part of the problem is that. With Days, I don't know if they were taping this far ahead when you were with them, but they're like 2 months plus ahead. So if they've already got stuff in the can that, you know.
And that's a huge problem
really
with all shows.
I know
there's a big issue with that with all the
reasons. Yeah, it's the budget reasons and everything, but it does make it harder to be flexible if something really stinks. You know,
absolutely. And we as writers get frustrated with that. Like, I remember there were a few times on World Turns where we got way too far ahead. And when you get so far ahead in the writing, you know, you kind of like lose track of the story a bit because it's all kind of abstract and on paper and it's not really out there yet. So you kind of like lose track of what's happening and where you are. And when we would get too far ahead at World Turns, I remember there were a few times where Hogan and Gene, my head writers, would say, like, you know, they would go to Chris Galvin and be like, can we, like, take a week off or something? Because we're starting to lose track of the story. Like, we're getting way too far ahead, and if we need to change something, it's impossible to change something.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, and that was 10 years ago, especially now, you know, it's all about the almighty dollar. It's all about budget. And an easy way to save is to just, like, tape so far in advance and take a week off once a month. And it's rough on everybody. It's rough on the actors. It's rough on the writers. It's, you know, even the actors lose track of the story and where they are. And, you know, because they're taping so far ahead and they're taping out of sequence and they're not sure, like, is this before or after the scenes I taped yesterday? I mean, it's tough. But.
It's a difficult business to be in and has only gotten more difficult over the years. So, I mean, we all respect what they do. Each, you know, I mean, even with the writing, it's like, you know, like you were saying, you know, you try to pay attention if there's 100 people saying the same thing or whatever. But, you know, when you've got all these voices saying this and that, I'm sure, you know, at least the higher-ups are thinking, well, we have all these other things to factor into it, not just budget, but so-and-so's contract ends in June, and if we put him in a storyline with da-da-da, I mean, there's just so many moving pieces. I don't know how they keep track of it, to be honest. It's like,
I don't know how we keep track of it sometimes myself. and sometimes we do lose track of it. Sometimes we do make mistakes. I feel like, you know, part of the problem now with the industry is that so few people are willing to admit when they made a mistake, and I think that's it's kind of created a lack of faith between fans and the powers that be, because when there's a constant, you know, company line toed, You know, the fans know that, if you'll pardon my French, that we're full of shit. They know that. Like, they can see it. And they're like, you know, the show is not working, and you're sitting there saying everything's wonderful and everything's perfect. And so I do feel like, you know, there are times where, you know, people should stop and say, like, you know what? Like, this looked really great on paper, and it's not working out the way we thought it would, and that's okay, and we're going to end it and move on to something else.
Okay.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, personally, but, you know, other people's egos...
Fans are pretty forgiving. If it's kind of like the same thing in politics, if you just admit something's not working or whatever, then it's like, okay, we can all move on from it. But if, you know, sometimes we've seen with, you know, head writers that they stick to something way too long, you know, way long, you know, long,
right.
way past the time. But anyway, I don't know. It's I'm sure it's difficult. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you worked when Ed Scott was producing, then it switched to Tomlin. What was going on? And I was hearing great stuff. What was going on? Ed Scott was producer, and I was hearing storylines that were upcoming, and then Tomlin came in and changed everything.
Well, yeah, that's usually what, I mean, you know, that's usually what happens when new EPs and new head writers take over. You know, for better or worse, that's, you know, I always say that the best weeks of a soap opera you'll ever see are when a new head writer or executive producer takes over, and that's only because they end all the previous stories, so everything happens and everything comes to a head. And so usually all the fans are like, oh, my God, this show's finally good again, because so much is happening every day. And it's not so much that it's good, it's just that they're ending all the previous storylines. So every day something huge is happening, and then once they get into their own stories, it's like, oh, here we go again, and they get, you know,
exactly.
I missed I was part of the team that got fired during the strike.
That was not fun.
Yeah. So I missed a lot of what happens. You know, I have no idea what happened after that. I know third-hand information from talking to friends and whatnot. You know, and who knows if it's right or wrong or whatever. And it's kind of irrelevant at this point. I just know that, you know, here's what I know. I know that when shows are in trouble, and that when networks are hovering over you, and there are, you know, rumors of cancellation, that very drastic measures are taken, and sometimes no one knows why or how or if there's any real logic behind it, but it's like, oh my God, we have to change something, let's change this. I don't know what it was like at Days in 2008 when Ed left. I know that when I worked under Ed, I loved working under him. He was a tough producer. But his notes were fantastic on my episodes.
Oh.
Like, every time he gave a note, it always made the episode better. I'd always say, oh, my God, he's so right. Oh, this makes it so much better. I loved working under Ed.
And it's nice
and
that
so,
you could appreciate that. You didn't have the attitude where, well, I don't need to have notes. It's nice that you were receptive and could see what a quality guy, producer he was.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've had EPs who've given you notes, and it's just a stupid note. It's like, why do you have them drinking coffee? They should be drinking soda. Why are they drinking coffee? Take out coffee, Tom. Take out coffee. And I'm like, okay, I'll take out coffee. It's not the end of the world. Like, okay, they're drinking soda now.
I've worked for people like that too in the business world.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like this in every industry. So those are the people you're like, oh, really? But Ed's notes, Ed would give you a note and he would tell you why he was changing it. You know, he would say, this is a great scene, but could you just tag it here instead? Because I think this is a stronger line to end the scene on. And you're like, oh, you're so right. Like, it's. So I don't know. I had a great experience with Ed. I don't want to speak for everybody who's ever worked for him, you know, of all time. But I personally, I had a great time with him.
Can I ask a storyline you wrote in 2007?
I came on. I started. My first episode aired in. I started working there in 2006. But my first episode aired in January of 2007. It happened right after all the New Year's stuff happened, with like EJ and Sammy in the car and John getting shot. I came on literally like 2 weeks after that happened.
Okay. So you weren't involved in the 12/29 2006 episode.
No, I was not involved in the writing of the 12/29 episode. I came in right after, literally right after it.
Wow.
And so, I was kind of... Yeah, I was kind of thrust into
it. What did you think your best work was on there? Do you have the favorite one you had, and maybe ones that you didn't like too well or didn't think went too well?
Episode-wise, I had a few favorite episodes there. I loved, I got to write, there were three episodes there. Everybody's heard me tell me this. I'm sorry if you heard this already, everybody who's listening. John's funeral. I loved writing John's funeral. I thought,
I
volunteered to write it. I didn't want to kill John. I thought it was a bad idea. However, if we were doing it, I really wanted to write the funeral because I've been watching Days since like 1983. So, I was a huge Days fan growing up. Like, I was a crazy Days fan. Like, working at Days was like a dream come true for me.
I have you beat, though.
You're for that?
1967.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, when you're – and a lot of fans don't really understand this. When you find out your head writer is killing a character, it's not that you want them to, but, like, you want to write it because you want to do it justice. You don't want somebody who's never written for – you know, who doesn't know anything about Days to write that. So I wrote the funeral, and I love writing that. And I wrote the Thanksgiving Shell Wedding, which I love.
Oh, wow.
Like that.
Okay.
And the Christmas episode, which ended up being Alice's last episode on the air, which none of us knew at the time. But I loved writing that Christmas episode, too. I just felt like it gave me to be asked to write something like the Horton Christmas ornaments when I grew up watching it, like to be asked to write that was like, you know, I remember crying for 3 days straight. And like Thanksgiving to write the Shell Wedding, and I got to write this toast from Doug, and it was all very like warmth and family. And you know, it's so rare we get to write that because everything is usually so like angst.
A lot of that now. Yeah.
And I thought we were missing a lot of it then too.
You were the associate head writer, right? Associate head
writer? Associate writer is a breakdown writer. That's a breakdown writer. It's a fancy name for a breakdown writer.
Okay.
So it's basically I wrote the breakdown and somebody else wrote the script.
Can you explain that? I mean, I know a little bit about things, but could you just, because I'm always intrigued with the writing and everything, and I've heard these terms, and I know, like, the one thing I do know is I can tell who wrote the script by looking at that last writer that's on the screen for that day. You know, I can say I figured that part out. But could you just go over that briefly with us as far as how that works?
Yeah, basically, the head writer or writers will so we write 3 months in advance. So we're in the middle of July. So let's say now we are writing the middle of beginning of October. So over this past weekend, the head writer would write a document that basically says everything that's going to happen in every storyline in the next week's worth of episodes, in the next 5 episodes in October. So on Monday morning, the network reads that, and the network gives the head writer notes. You can do this, you can't do this, whatever. And then starting Monday afternoon, the head writers give that document to the 5 breakdown writers, and the 5 breakdown writers with the head writers figure out basically what happens in each episode, which characters are played in which episodes, which sets are played in which episodes, and how many sets with greenery can you use, and which actors have days off so you can't play them on certain episodes. And so we figure out where everybody's storylines begin and end in each show and all that stuff, and we each get assigned a day of the week, and we write a 15 to 20 page document that is basically the episode that you see on the air, just kind of in narrative form and in, like, outline form. It's not in script form. It says literally, you know, Sammy walks into a room and catches EJ going through her desk drawer. EJ covers, but Sammy says, "What the hell do you think you're doing?" On EJ, thwarted, cut to. And so basically it's a 15 to 20 page doc, and then it would cut to the next scene. So that document, we have 3 days to write that. And we have to kind of figure out the order of the scenes and, like, which scenes will be your act tags and which one will be your mid-break tag. And so there's some dialogue. It's very technical. There's probably between, like, 40 and 60% dialogue in it. Every show is a little different. Some shows like less dialogue. Other shows like more dialogue in their breakdowns. You know, sometimes you'll just write Sammy gets angry, and other times you'll write, you know, Sammy's speech, what she says when she gets angry. It depends on your head writer, because every head writer likes different things. So that we write that in 3 days. That goes to the network. The network gives us notes on that. We incorporate the notes, and then it goes to a script writer who has 5 days to turn that into a script.
Wow.
So basically, like, we lock in the order of the scenes, what happens in each scene. You got to figure out the timing. Like, if this person leaves the Salem Pub in Act 2 and this person leaves the DeBaron Mansion in Act 4, do they have enough time to get to, you know, Salem Place by Act 5? And what is the other person doing in Acts 3 and 4 if they leave the other place in Act 2? Do you need to stall them and keep them there until Act 3? I mean, those are the kind of things that a breakdown writer has to, like, figure out. Which is why when I got to write, like Thanksgiving, when you've got the entire cast in it, and everybody's running around for Belle and Sean's wedding, and there was stuff with Lucas and Sammy and the kids, and that was when Marlena went to Stefano and said, "You made me a killer." She left, you know, she left the wedding to go confront Stefano in the house and say she was going to kill him. Like, you know, you got to figure out. You made me this woman. You have to figure out, like, okay, so when can Marlena leave the wedding? What do we need to get her back to the reception in time for? What acts will that take place in? I mean, it's kind of like putting a puzzle together.
Wow. Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'd like that.
Complicated, yeah.
Very cool.
Mm. Yeah.
So very
good. It's fun. Like, yeah.
And then the scriptwriter just... Oh, okay. Let me get the caller. She's been leaving a hole almost 10 minutes.
Oh, sure, no problem. I'm sorry. I'm babbling. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. We'll have you follow up with your question. Okay, we have area code 734.
Hi, Tom. It's David from Ann Arbor. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, David?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm good, thank
you. You were talking a little bit about writing John's funeral, and going through that episode, some of the things that a fan appreciated were the subtle things, like having Vivian send the flowers or having Marlena and Roman talk on the pier.
On the pier, right,
How do you think of those kind of subtle things that would really draw in?
Well, first of all, in terms of that particular episode, that one is kind of special. To answer your question, that one's kind of special because I was such a Days fan that I kind of had all that in my head. Like, I volunteered to write it, and I said, I want to open it on the flashback of Marlena, of John seeing Marlena on the pier, and then I want Marlena to come out in the fog, and she's looking for John on the pier, and she knows he's not going to slip out of the fog. And I was like, I want to put in Vivian, and I want to put in – there was a scene that got cut where Brady Skyped in with Belle because he got stuck in an airport. Another thing I cut because of budget was, like, all the people that were going to be at the funeral. There was going to be, like, cops, but then there were going to be, like, priests, and there were going to be, like, you know, everybody that, you know, as kind of ridiculous as John Black's backstory has been, you want everything to be acknowledged because this is his life. For John's death, it was all kind of in my head, and I really just wanted to do honor to the character. I've worked on other shows, though, where, like, you spend a lot of time on the phone with writer's assistants and with actors, and you're like, please give me every small detail you possibly can that I can include in this, because sometimes you don't have it in your memory, and you just, you know, you work extra hard to, you know, if you really want to do right by the fans, you know, you go through, you comb these databases and these websites, and you're trying to track down these little details, because I really do feel like it is those details that, you know,
absolutely,
that make it count.
It's tremendous, because we talked about before on General Hospital when Bobby doesn't even show up when her grandson is shot. Things like that, fans really appreciate when you have those details. So I just wanted
there's a strange, I happen to get a pass at Days for this. I don't know why. But there, at all the soaps I've worked at, there's kind of this strange belief that you shouldn't mention anybody who's not on the show unless they're coming back. Because I guess it gives a lot of fans false hope that if you say somebody's name, the fans think, oh, my God, they said their name, they're coming back. So a lot of times, I know a lot of writers who have written someone's name in, you know, like on a Thanksgiving episode, they'll be hanging up the phone and say, oh, that was, you know, so-and-so, the daughter that hasn't been on the show in 10 years, calling to say Happy Thanksgiving. And you think you're doing it just as a nice treat for the fans, but they'll take that out because they'll say, no, we don't want them to think that character's coming back. Take it out. So, which is a shame. I know. That sucks.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, so-and-so should have at least called, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we really appreciate it. That was a fantastic episode. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. That's
why I do this, man. That's why I did it. For all the hell that you guys put up with like networks and stuff. You hear stuff like that, and you just, you know, you're like, that's why I wrote soaps.
Well, didn't
that was?
I don't think I remember this
though.
Right, but
yeah,
what's
see, John Funeral, that was well reviewed, well received though by the fans. I mean, it must have made you feel good, because I mean, and if you screwed up John's funeral, I mean, holy cow.
I know, and that's exactly what. Yeah.
Yeah, there have been hell to pay, but no, it was very, very well done.
And I remember I gave a quote, right after I wrote it, I gave a quote saying, you know, how much I loved writing it, which, of course, was kind of misinterpreted. Everybody's like, he wanted John dead. Damn, that's how Gaspiello. And I was like, no, I didn't want John dead. You just, you know. So it's, yeah.
And didn't you find out that he was coming back, you know, like part the way through that? Or something?
When I was writing it. When I was writing the funeral, yeah. I found out he was coming back.
Well,
it was okay.
You know,
like
picturing him alive in the coffin, anyway. But it was amazing. It was just, I mean, you made us go there, even though in our back of our minds we knew he was probably coming back. But it was so authentic. I mean, Hope's what she said, and then you had Anna go up there, right? Didn't you have Anna talk at his funeral?
Yep.
And I thought that was so cool. I mean, of course we're Tony and Anna fans, so we appreciated that. But I thought it was so wonderful how. I mean, you really were speaking from a fan's perspective of knowing the show and knowing that history, you know, from the early 80s and everything. And for her to get up there and say, of course, I haven't watched this in a while, but it was something to the effect of just being her father, you know, raising her child. And stuff.
Raising
and
her child, yeah. That she, that,
being
yeah,
there
exactly.
When she
that.
Being there when she wasn't there. And stuff.
Yep.
I thought that was so cool. I loved it.
And
so,
that was,
yeah,
that was what was so much fun to write, you know, that episode, is being able to make those connections. Because I do remember Anna was kind of a last minute, like, oh, crap, Carrie. I totally have to acknowledge Carrie in all of this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I was like, oh, I need an Anna eulogy. And I remember, like, you know, another writer was like, Anna, you're going to put Anna in there? And I was like, no, I have to do it for Carrie. I have to.
Awesome.
Very good.
Like, yeah.
I love it. But and was it in the same episode that Marlena went back to her house and she's sitting in the chair at the end?
Yes.
Is that another? Was
yes,
that okay?
And the coffee cup and all that. And I have to say,
I actually went out and bought the song. The rest of the CD was horrible, but I went out and bought the song for the end of that show because I was like, it's the whole thing. I mean, I'm an old style Marlena fan, not particularly newer Marlena, but I it did take me to a place. I mean, it really, I know all of us can say that it was really emotional. The whole thing was amazing. So,
oh, thank
anyway.
You.
So, but it's neat when you can still recall that 3 or 4 years later.
Those are definitely, there are episodes on Days that, like, I totally to this day still remember, like, every second of.
Oh, yeah.
There's others that I can't at all, and I'm like, oh, did I write that? But... yeah, there's some that are in my memory.
What are the stories that you? What's one of the things that you kind of cringe when you of the time?
Yeah,
we forgive you, but we're curious.
Cringe with you.
Touch the Sky was tough to write. Touch the Sky was really tough to write.
You mean touch my thigh? Airway my thighs.
That was a tough one to write. The whole period in between. Wow, it was like March and April of that year. It was really tough to write because I don't know if you guys know the backstory behind this, but Steve getting out of the insane asylum and Sean and Belle being caught on Tindalao was supposed to happen like the second week of March or third week of March or something like that, and we were told we had to stall it and have it happen at May Sweeps.
No wonder it dragged on.
Well, yeah. So of course, as writers, we're now like, oh, okay, so now we got to fill 6 more weeks of this. So, and that was kind of why we brought Adrian back the first time, which I thought was actually a good way to stall that story, was at least we could get some emotional Steve Adrian scenes out of it.
Right.
But Tindalau just dragged forever, and we knew when we were writing it. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of times when you guys are like, oh, this is dragging, or oh, this is moving too fast, I guarantee you that we're thinking the exact same thing.
Didn't I just write the same dialogue a week ago?
A lot of times.
How many times can Brandon Beamer take his shirt off? Well, I mean, I guess that, you know, well, that could be all the time. That'd be fine. But maybe that was a bad example, but
no. That
well,
great black.
I know we're. So, did you get to write any of the stuff around Tony and Anna?
Anna? Yeah.
Yeah, when they came back, and I was so excited because, I grew up on Tony and Anna, and, the weird thing
me
is
we
brought them back, and Hogan kind of, I'll be honest, when we brought them back, it was really kind of, we really wanted to make this Demara Brady story really big, but they didn't really kind of have their own solid storyline, which I'm sure you guys saw from on the air. So every time I was assigned them, Hogan kind of let me play a little bit. Like, he kind of let me kind of, you know, play around with, not tell a story because I wasn't the head writer, but if I wanted to kind of mix up Roman and Kate and Tony and Anna, because I kind of had this image in my head that, like, the real Tony must have known Kate when she was in Stefano's house when he was younger, and like I kind of had this whole image in my head of a backstory between Tony and Kate that we never got into, and like the real not Tony Andre Tony, but
believe me, as Tony and Anna fans, and also Kate fans, and a lot of Cayman fans. I mean, we were crushed because we were so when we saw those scenes.
We wanted
to Anna and Cayman quad home run.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been amazing.
We were all really crushed.
We were all really crushed. Yeah. I know the actors were too. I think they really wanted that too. So
They would have been so much fun. Like I just loved being able to write for all four of them.
Just in that one episode at the pub was awesome, and I mean, just
The one I was thinking of where I got to play, and I forget who was sitting there first. Was it Tony and Kate sitting there first, and then Roman and Anna walked in, or Roman and Anna? I forget who it was.
I
think Kate reached across and touched Tony's hand and gave them a hug or something.
Yeah,
it was awesome. It was awesome. If only.
Yep.
But. Yeah, so we really appreciate that one, too.
Thank you. I was never asked to write a storyline, but it was kind of fun if I had an extra scene to be like, ooh, let's have a little fun here, put these four together for a scene. And, you know, I wish it could have gone somewhere more, but oh, well.
Yeah.
Did you write on the island scene when they found Tony on the island?
I did not actually write that scene. That was another writer. I remember reading it in the thrust and being like, oh, my God, because we had no idea. You know, the other writers didn't know what Hogan was planning for that. So when we found out that the real Tony was alive,
The only complaint I had was when they were reunited and they were there kissing, they had to have John and Marlena also kissing in the background.
Oh, that made us so mad.
They couldn't even give them their own scene.
I know.
Like, why did we have to pan to John and Marlena? They were gone for 20 years.
I don't remember why the decision was made, to be honest with you. I do remember that, though.
Yeah.
I remember it was a little strange.
Yeah, do you remember? Okay.
Well, I have to say, I wrote Sony had a thing. When the Sony board was up before it crashed or whatever happened, the hackers got through it or whatever. But a year ago, they had a thing about tell us about your favorite stories or experiences or scenes or whatever. And I know you didn't write that particular episode, but I wrote in and said something about it, Tony and Anna's reunion being, I mean, this sounds corny, but it was like the most gratifying for any kind of fan. I mean, it was the most gratifying experience I'd had as a viewer as far as, you know, just.
Never thought it would happen.
Yeah, never thought it would happen. And
no,
21
never.
Years later, they get back together, and it's like they were never apart. But it was exciting.
Nope.
I mean, it wasn't boring.
The chemistry between those
like
two.
The chemistry was there. The history was there. And those characters are so rich. And, of course, the actors are wonderful. And they actually
need to come back.
published what I wrote in this little thing, and several other people have written in too about just the whole having them come back and everything. And so, yeah. And did you? The other thing we were going to ask you is, along those lines, is did you write the scenes, or were you involved at all in the scenes where they were trying to get in the Demira mansion to get the letters and Steve?
Yes.
And all?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was Steve. It was Steve and Hope, right? Didn't
yes,
Steve
and
Hope or something?
They had to kiss each other to
yes.
become like they were together.
And I do remember Steven and Christian were having a blast. Like, everybody was having a great time. Like, they were so happy with those scenes. Like, just because there's something fun and different. Like, I think that was
yes.
kind of, you know, you gave them, I think especially on days, you know, and I don't came outside in the wrong way, but I feel like so much of what they do is always so much retread that when you give them something fun and different, they just sink their teeth into it. They're just so happy to, like, play something a little bit, like, you know, not the same, you know, stuff that they play every single day.
Right.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, I have a lot of problems with a lot of the letters story, but there's moments in it that I absolutely adore. Like, there's moments within the Vendetta story that I'm like, oh, that was so great. Like, I remember the Demira family dinner. It was a holiday or something. It was like 4th of July or Memorial Day, and we did the Brady's at the pub, and we did the Demira's at the mansion, and it was just the two families, and that was it. And I remember Hogan actually wrote the breakdown for that, and the Demira scenes, there was no plot. It was just all the Demiras, like, snarking at each other the entire time, like just constant. Like,
they all ended up passed out. They all ended up passed out, like on the couch with Bart. I loved Bart.
No, that was something different. That was the Tony and Anna, the Andre and Anna date. Yeah, that was the Andre and Anna date.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what holiday it was. I can't remember. It was. It might have been. I think it was Memorial Day.
Maybe the hug or something. Was that that or maybe that?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, he did a hug.
It was, you know, Tony E. J. Celeste, Bart.
Yes.
Roll.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
They were all at the table.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moments within the Vendetta story where I'm like, wow, that was a blast to write. Like, we just had a good time writing that stuff. And again, like you said, sneaking in to get the letters was fun. And,
that was great. Now, that kind of reminded me of the old days.
Hold on, let me get a caller, but they've been on for 10 minutes. Area code 856. Hello?
Oh, my gosh. I did not think I would get through.
Sorry.
It's
having too much fun.
You call in to listen to the show because your internet keeps cutting out and you really don't want to stop listening to it, so then you wind up calling in and then you just listen and it's a good time. So I really don't mind being put unmuted. No,
okay,
I'm good.
Okay,
I'm very good.
Right. Okay, well, then I will take you off, and I'll let you listen then, Cole.
Tom, by the way, I miss you. I can't wait to see you in September.
Thanks, Val. I thought it was you. I thought I recognized the voice.
It is me. Apparently, I'm getting recognized more so now than ever with my voice. But, man, I let me tell you, I'm so happy I met that guy at the Emmys. I felt like shit on a stick because I threw him up. I'm now admitting it to, like, hundreds of people listening to the show. Yeah, I threw him up. We originally had a date, and I left him hanging.
This is Neville Lee, Buzzworthy Radio. For everybody who doesn't know, this is Neville Lee from Buzzworthy Radio. It's just called
Yeah. I recognize his voice.
Yep.
In case you didn't know, that is my actual name. It is Neville. My name's really not Buzzworthy at all. So just so you're aware.
You are Buzzworthy.
my name's really the Diva, so there you go.
I have way more Z's in my username on the here, but
Way more D's.
Z's. Because he was commenting.
You're the one to comment. Okay, I got. See, I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes. Just so you know.
I'm glad you called in, Neville.
Well, of course. Like, what else do I have to do on a Wednesday? It's hot, I'm sweaty. You can put two eggs on me, they'd be done in less than 5 minutes. I have nothing better to do with my time. But I appreciate you unmuting me anyway.
Ask a question. Help these poor listeners. Ask a question.
Ask a question, yeah.
Ask a question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm clearly not mentally prepared for this. Why should people watch WWE Raw?
I can answer that question. This is a huge adventure for me, I gotta tell you. This is a whole, like, completely different world that I'm working in now. I love it. I can't really talk about the details of it, but what I love about it is that it kind of takes the best elements of serialized storytelling in soap operas, because I don't know if everybody knows this, but there's definitely serialized storylines that are built around the matches. So it kind of takes, like, you know, I kind of look at it as, like, I get to kind of write the soap opera around action sequences, and it's something, and it's on live television, and it's in front of, you know, 10,000 fans in an arena, so it's a whole different, in some ways it's just like writing soaps in the sense that, like, you know, you've got 3 minutes to get this scene out and you have to find a way to build character moments and to plot and make it happen very quickly. But, you know, this is happening around pyrotechnics and wild lights and cheering fans and people flying through the air. Oh, no, there's pyrotechnics at every show, and it's so, like, and people flying through the air and doing somersaults, and you're actually in the middle of this. I'm not working from my home anymore. I'm actually there, like, you know, 10 feet away from the arena watching this and being like, wow, this is my life now. Like, it's so you know, obviously it's not for everybody, but, you know, anybody who's ever actually watched wrestling, like, they know it's not like watching, it's unlike anything else. It's a whole kind of genre unto itself. They've kind of created this soap opera-y, comic book-y, sportsy arena, live TV kind of conglomerate. It's really, I've never experienced anything like it working there, and I love it. It's a rush.
Would you ever use pyrotechnics in any conversation ever? Because honestly,
no,
that is a complete utter word that I would never ever.
Never. It's incredible. I mean, I never thought in a million years that, like, I'd be able to, like, write a scene and have it end with, like, fireworks, literal fireworks going off right behind it. Like, so being able to write that is very, very cool.
Like a rock star every script.
Not real.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like being, like, a rock star on tour. Like, it's very cool, and it's a blast. I'm having a great time. I miss the people, from soaps, but I still keep in touch with them. And I honestly, like, I was kind of feeling like I was in such a rut towards the end in daytime. Nothing against YNR or anything. I think any show I would have worked out, I would have felt like I was in a rut. And it was just nice to kind of, after 12 years, kind of, you know, surprise myself and say, like, can you do something else? Are you capable of doing anything else? Well, hell yeah, I am capable of doing something else. And that was kind of a great feeling. I don't know if that came out right, but
yeah. Well, I was following reading about the whole transition. It was really interesting to watch, to read. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, and it was, you know, everybody at YNR was really cool about it. I mean, I knew that they were looking at other writers anyway. They were looking at, like, Chris Weitzel, who ended up coming in.
One of Days is
he was Days' co-head writer, and I know they really wanted to bring him on, and we had a full team, and I just thought, like, you know, and I know, like, Maria liked me, and everybody liked me there, but I was like, you know what, like, I know they want to bring Chris on, I know they're like, this team is too big, who do we get rid of? I'm like, you know what, I'm going to make this easy, like, I'm going to start looking for a new job, because I really was like, I'm not having... Again, this was not about YNR. I don't want anybody to think like I wasn't happy at YNR. I was happy. Mm-hmm. I love that team and everything, but it was just like, I got burned out just writing weddings and funerals and baby switches and doppelgangers and tornadoes and hurricanes and storms and And airplane crashes and car crashes and you know, parties and balls and you know, and I love that stuff. And I grew up on soaps, and I you know, it's so, I never in a million years thought that I would ever say those words, that like, I need a break. But I did. I needed a break. I was like, I'm completely burnt out on just on this constant just, and there's no break either. There's no vacation. You just write, you know,
episode
a week.
Yeah, that's the other amazing thing about serials. I mean, it's like they go on and on for 50 years, you know, or 40 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Pretty amazing.
So,
that's
yeah.
Totally
so
understandable.
Yeah, and I felt weird, like, you know, all my friends, because I remember being in, like, middle school and telling people that I was going to write for soap operas one day. Like, everyone knew this was kind of my dream job. So when I actually said, like, I think I want to leave, people were like, what are you talking about? Like, you can't, like, this is what you wanted to do. And I was like, no, I think I need to do something else. Like, even for a few years.
You listen to yourself. You listen to what was going on inside instead of what the outside world. Because sometimes common sense isn't what, you know, or what other people would think is it makes sense is not what makes sense for you at that time. So
exactly. Yeah.
And you sound like you're having a blast with this.
I am. I mean, it's again. I went from working from home all day long to now like living on a tour bus. It's a whole different reality that I have no. Like, I can't believe where my life is now compared to where it was 3 months ago. It's so crazy.
I'm just
like
shocked that there are actually
type.
Writers for the WWE. I thought it was all real.
It wasn't a real. See, now, I'm really disappointed.
Please,
oh, man.
Please
I thought
don't
it was
break
real.
My heart. Tom, please don't break my heart. Salem is real, right? I mean, it
real?
Is, right?
Say yes. Salem is real.
Okay.
Oh.
As long as Salem's
oh,
real,
man.
I'm okay. I can deal with it.
I'm shattered now, man.
Yeah, my sons love the WWE, and I have to thank you so much, because that's the only show my sons will sit there and watch and not move for 2 straight hours.
Really? Can I ask something? How old are they?
9 and 6. My six-year-old loves John Cena. If John Cena's on the screen, he doesn't move, he doesn't talk, he's like a tramp.
And that's, I'm so glad you told me that. When when I was first going through the interview process, I went to a show at MSG, and I had never been to a live wrestling show, and I hadn't watched it since the 80s. And I wasn't sure if this was something I wanted to do, and I was like, well, let me just go and check it out. And I was sitting there watching it, and John Morrison was in the ring. And, like, this 8-year-old kid behind me, John Morrison was getting beaten in the ring, and this 8-year-old behind me stood up and screamed, "Believe in yourself, John Morrison! Believe in yourself!" And I turned to my partner and I was like, "I want to do this. Like, I want to make an 8-year-old jump up and scream, 'Believe in yourself!' Like, that is why I want to write this. Like, this is unbelievable." And so, because I know wrestling used to be geared more towards adults, and since they've kind of gone the family-friendly route, I mean, being able to see these kids in the audience, and kids like your kids, you know, who are 9 and 6, who are watch it and are just, I mean, these are like their heroes. It's it's great to be a part of that.
Mhm. Oh, yeah, when the Edge retired, I mean, they were just upset for weeks. Why, is he still him? Oh, they were so upset. And she was actually my favorite, too, whenever I would watch with them. But he was just devastated. And then I watched it when I was little. You know, I remember Randy Savage. He was my favorite back then.
Sure,
you know, and that was
sure.
When he passed away. So,
yeah, and that was, I grew up on, like, Randy and Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And I mean, that was what I watched growing up. So, yeah, it's so weird. It's so strange. This is where I am, but I love it. It's just so wild.
I mean, yeah, you went from kind of writing, aiming maybe towards women to children and men. I mean, that's such a huge switch.
It is, but I always say, like, storytelling is storytelling, and if you just tell a good story, it'll rise above gender.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
you know?
too, that guys, even though it's not as typical for guys to watch soaps, per se, there are some that do watch and have watched for many years. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, and so, like, the WWE is sort of, in a way, similar to that. I mean, it's telling a story, and you've got the people you root for and the villains and the good guys and all that stuff.
Totally.
And, you know, and it's like, I remember my brother a couple years ago. I guess about 4 years. Huh?
It is like a soap.
Yep.
It is like a soap.
So I can see there's definitely some differences, but definitely parallels there. And so, that's neat. Was there somebody else in the queue? Because I don't want to ask another question if somebody's waiting.
No.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to start rambling. I feel like I ramble and then I don't give people time to talk.
No. We're fascinated by it, so it's fine. I just wanted to make sure in case somebody was trying. Because I wanted to ask you, I noticed that I read somewhere that you worked with the Coolitons.
Yes, Coolitons, yes.
Yeah, is that how do you, Coolitons? Is that how you pronounce
it? Coolitons.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm like a fangirl of theirs. I just love it since they've been on Dave. I mean, he came first, and then she joined maybe several months ago, I think. But
yeah.
I just, like, love their writing. You can tell.
I actually play
a game. Like, ever since I learned a couple years ago, I learned how to tell who the scriptwriter was for the episode. I play a game with myself, and I almost always guess it right when it's Richard, and most of the time when it's Carolyn, too. So it's just kind of a fun little nerdy game I play with myself, you know, but they're so great. They're just, their dialogue is just wonderful.
And one of the things I learned, because I worked with both of them at Another World and World Turns, and I was really young.
I'm trying to figure out where you worked with them. Okay, so you worked with them. Another World?
Another World, Carolyn was the script editor and Richard was a breakdown writer, and then when I went to As the World Turns, Carolyn was the co-head writer. And Carolyn kind of mentored me when I first started writing breakdowns, when I first made the transition. One of the things that I love about them so much, and they're great people in real life, but one of the things I loved about them working with them is that they were the first ones to really teach me that you could have the crappiest storyline and the worst episode ever and still deliver an amazing script.
And they do that.
That's a huge thing, because you can hate all the storylines you have to write, and it will show unless you turn that part of your brain off and you say, check all that at the door, you know, leave all your personal shit aside and write a damn good episode. And stop, you know, saying like, oh, but the fans won't like this. And, you know, at some point you have to let all of that go and say, I'm going to deliver the best possible script. And you know, some writers don't always follow that. And Richard and Carolyn, no matter what was going on in the story, no matter what was, they always delivered their best work. And I would read a script of theirs and I'd be like, wow, this dialogue just sparkles. And it's so impactful and it's so powerful, even though what's happening in the scene is jack. Like, it's jack. There's nothing at all happening in this scene, but they're finding something that will happen in it, in the words, and and that's the sign of an amazing scriptwriter.
Perfect way to describe it. That makes perfect sense.
I'm a huge fan of Richard and Carolyn. I think they're phenomenal. I think I'm totally Team Coulton all the way.
They always have a lot of snark in their dialogues, especially when they're writing for Victor Kiriakis in particular. I mean, there's just zingers and one-liners all over the place, and it's soap's neat comedy, and they always bring it, and I always appreciate that about them.
Absolutely.
And
they know
when
to make it heartwarming. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just like you did, they bring in character, like, oh, these people actually are familiar with the character and its history. You know what I mean? Like, that comment that character just made, I totally get that. But, you know, I mean, somebody else might not because they don't know. You know, it's really neat that, you know, and I can see how you guys work together and everything. It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I got all that from them. I mean, they're both, actually. Carolyn more so than Richard, but they're both long-term soap fans. I mean, Carolyn Sutter, I believe, is the secretary, the executive producer of Another World back in, like, 1978 or something. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, and that was when she was young. And, she, you know, I mean, so they were soap fans. They worked their way up. You know, they worked in production first. They really, like, I don't know. They love this genre and they love this industry, and you can tell that at every job they've ever had.
Well, those fans really appreciate it when writers, you know, pay attention to the history.
Absolutely.
When you were writing something, did you ever do like you knew that there was a perception out there about a character or something, but nobody ever says it in the dialogue? Did you ever stick anything in there like as kind of a either a shout out to the fans or like a subtle reference that, I don't know, I'm just curious.
Yeah, I have. God help me if I can remember any of them right now.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember what it was. I did something. Oh my God, I wrote like 3 Jack Abbey scenes. And what the hell did I put in it? I did something. And I can't remember what it was now.
I'll bet you did.
I mean, there were a few nicknames that I've thrown in over the years that have been like their nicknames from the message boards. And I'll throw that in once in a while. I wish I could think of any of them right now, and I can't.
Because
when you do it, you kind of want to do it on the sly so that the powers that be don't realize what you're doing.
Right,
you know, because
exactly.
Then it makes it seem like you're in cohorts with the internet fans, and then they get upset and like, why is he talking to them? Blah 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 blah. They get all angry.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of stick it in when nobody's paying attention, and it's, you know, yeah. And then you get to go on the boards and read. Oh my God, maybe the writers do read what we're saying. And I had to sit there and laugh, and I'm like, maybe we do, hee hee. that's fun. There were a few times where I know on YNR I did that with Sharon and Adam a few times.
Well, we got some YNR fans listening here because there's some in the chat room. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Right on. I had a blast at YNR this last go around. It was a great way to kind of leave the industry. It was, you know.
Yeah.
Again, like I said, Shifting Estates, there were stories that I wasn't a big fan of, but overall, when I look back on it, you know, as an experience overall, it was really wonderful.
Yeah, with YNR and with Dace, you had that too. What the hell is the deal with all the doppelgangers, and how hard is that to write for?
You have an actor
playing multiple characters and...
It's tough. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't tough. It's even when you have actors who are phenomenal, like Teo or what's her name? Stacey. Oh my God. Stacey, what's your last name? Haydick. Thank you, Stacey Haydick. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot already. You have these actors who are phenomenal. Yes, and they are both phenomenal actors who work their butts off on these double roles. But even when you're writing it, it's tough, man. It's a tough thing to kind of wrap your head around. And which is why the episodes, if you get assigned, again, this goes back to the Richard and Carolyn thing, there were a few episodes in both doppelganger stories, the one on Days and the one on YNR, that I was really proud of. And I was proud of it because I was able to find something really something really cool in a story that I wasn't really connecting with, if that makes sense. Like, I remember there was a scene that I wrote between Andre and EJ on Days when everybody thought Andre was Tony. And it was EJ saying, the only reason why you hate me is every time you see me, you see the baby that your wife used to leave you for John Black.
Oh,
and being
boy.
Able to write a line like that when I remember I was a fan in high school watching EJ being born and Kristen using baby EJ to try and get John away from Marlena, being able to write a line like that is a really cool thing for like a fan.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, wow, like this is a great moment. But was I a big fan of the Tony Andre, like back and forth? Constant? No, not really. It kind of got old after a while. But being able to write a scene like that was really cool.
Yeah.
Those, you find those moments where you're like, oh, that was a really cool moment. Oh, I liked writing that one moment. And that's, you kind of hold on to that because, it reminds you why you do this job.
Right. Oh, so fun to hear all this. It brings back all these memories.
Oh, yeah.
Talking with you about it.
And that was a tough time of days. I know, a lot of the fans were really divided on a lot of the stuff we did, and I certainly don't blame them. I was divided on a lot of the things. I know that the EJ Sammy thing especially, really...
You mean the...
Everything from 1229 on, yeah.
Yeah,
1229 on, I always, as a writer, you sometimes have to... you have to kind of tell yourself certain things to kind of get you through it. Like I remember thinking all that year, like, this is all worth it if, because I remember I remember talking to Hogan about this and saying that Sammy, or EJ, can never commit a crime that Sammy hasn't done herself. So tricking somebody into sleeping with her, yes. Shooting somebody, yes. Like, it was always like kidnapping a baby, yes. Like, it all had to be crimes so that when Sammy looked at EJ, she saw the person
herself.
She could have been had she not kind of tried to turn her life around.
Oh.
And EJ knew that Sammy always had it in her to become this person again. And I thought, you know, for all the awful things that EJ did to Sammy, there's something really awesome to write between these two characters when they're kind
uh-huh.
of a mirror of each other. And it's everything Sammy doesn't want to see in herself, she sees in EJ.
Right.
Right.
And I kind of felt that way writing Adam and Sharon on Young and the Restless, too. Like, whether you like them or hate them, I'm not saying they should be a super couple who should be together forever and have, like, hearts and flowers and rainbows and puppies. I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a joy to write any kind of relationship, love, hate, lust, you know, fear, whatever, between two characters who just have so much psychological stuff between them. You know what I mean? Like, it's some of it's twisted and some of it's warped and some of it's wonderful and some of it is they're meant for each other. You know, in some ways they're soulmates, in some ways they should never be together ever. Like, you know, like and being able to kind of capture all of those things at the same time. I think it's really cool.
Well,
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess kind of why, I don't know if you're currently watching Days or have been in the last couple of years, but they put Stefano and Kate together.
Yes,
and I think the reason that works, partly because the actors are phenomenal, but, you know, they're both such multi-layered characters, and you can go so many ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just makes it interesting, you know, like they can be together for a couple of years and it's not boring. It's still, you know, if they keep writing for them, that is. Now we don't see
and then
the
you could break them up. You could break them up and still keep them in story together, even if they're not married, even if they're at each other's throats.
Right.
You know, they're still in scenes together at each other's throats, and it's still like you want to watch every day because it's there's so many different layers of that relationship. That's the stuff you love writing as writers. I think that's why, like, you know, it's so hard for so many of us to. You know, when we get that mandate to kind of write the hearts and flowers stuff, it's tough to write and have it be realistic now because it's not. You know, what I loved about Tony and Anna, going back to Tony and Anna, is, you know, they had this great romantic reunion on the beach. But then I remember they came home and it was like, oh, wait, things are different now. It's been 20 years. Like, and there's these moments of like, oh, wait, what's happened while I was gone? Like, the reality kind of sets in.
Right.
And that's really fun stuff to play because, you know, I do remember a few scenes, and I can't remember specifics, but I remember a few scenes where it was like, you know, Tony wanting to make her dinner or Tony wanting to, like, you know, turn the music on and set up roses and Anna being like, whoa, wait a minute, like, this is not, you know, 1984 anymore and, you know, shit's gone down and you got to give me a second here to kind of regroup. I just found you on an island. Like, this is all a little crazy. And then you get to play, like, the kind of the comedy of the whole thing. You get to kind of play the comedy of it. And the comedy isn't, like, you know, laugh-out-loud comedy. It's character-driven comedy, you know?
Right. Oh, character-driven,
you know,
yes.
Watching Anna kind of panic in the moment and freak out and Tony try to calm her down and be like, it's okay, it's fine, like, chill out.
Oh, classic Tony and Anna,
Yeah, like, that's what you – so when you're told to write nothing but romance, and I've gotten that mandate before with, like, just give me five scenes of romance, and you're like, what does that mean? What is five scenes of romance mean? I can't just write five scenes of them kissing. You know, you do five scenes of romance, and you end up with John and Marlena on the 4th of July making out on the beach. Like, even the John and Marlena fans didn't want to watch that because nothing was happening. It was just kind of... You know, but if you give them something from their history or from character or from, you know, and I wrote those John and Marlena scenes, I take full responsibility for them. They were terrible, and I'm embarrassed by them. Like, not everything I write is, you know, I take full responsibility for the garbage I've turned in. And then it airs, and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I wrote that. Like, I'm such a hack. I'm so terrible. You know, and then you see your name, like, you know, on the board saying they're a hack, and you're like, yes, I am, and I'm going to go shoot myself now. Like, it's just so awful. So when you get a moment to kind of, you know, write romance coming from character, it changes everything, and the medium kind of takes on a whole new. It takes on a whole new light to you.
Well, and I don't know if you, like, have you watched any of this E.J. Taylor stuff with the magical scarf?
And that's, I've seen some of it, and that's kind of a great example of what I was just talking about.
It's just romance that doesn't
work. It's romance for the sake of romance,
no,
and it doesn't make any sense. Exactly,
It's almost like, okay, it's week six of their quote-unquote relationship. Now, throw a blanket on ground, get some champagne, and have a picnic where we make out. Or, you know, it's like, we don't care. We don't,
right.
You know, there's nothing for us to feel like you're basing anything on, you know. So, yeah, the character-driven. And when you can't even, when the actors, I mean, the actors aren't even convinced. You know, and that's got to be hard.
No, because they were supposed to fall in love with, like, the second they met, and that doesn't make any, like,
no.
It didn't make any sense.
They just
why?
Saw each other.
Why would they even be drawn? Yeah, and
yeah.
So I was just like, stay away from all woolen apparel, you know, I was like, you never know what's going to happen. But I mean, I think that's one of the reasons, aside from a lot of other reasons, that just didn't work, and what you described just now is exactly one of the main reasons why, aside from, you know, some people just weren't going to like him anyway, but that's a perfect example of why that particular one is not working at all.
Well, I also feel like, and this gets into another thing, and I don't want to harp on, you know, specifically on you know, what Days is doing wrong, because people will be like, why is he putting Days down all the time? But I think a lot of shows, they introduce characters, and they don't, I don't know who Taylor is.
Right.
You know who I'm, like, I don't know. I mean, I remember Taylor from the first go around, you know, in the 90s, but, like, I don't know who this character is. And until I know who this character is, I can't fall in love with watching her fall in love with somebody. You know, I need to know who she is before I know who they are as a couple. And I said this, too, about John and Marlena when I first, I mean, I was a huge John and Marlena fan, but I had a tough time writing them because they had kind of become this one character, and I didn't know who they were as separate people. And I never had more fun writing Marlena and John than when after he came back and it was a RoboJohn and Marlena was kind of
tougher. Oh, we love new John.
Because then at least you have something, you know who Marlena is as an individual and you know who John is as an individual. And so then you can watch them fall in love.
Oh my
Taylor,
God.
I don't know.
You were writing RoboJohn?
I wrote the beginning, the very,
really
very beginning.
Oh,
and then we got fired. Yeah, and then we got
fired.
Wonderful.
Loved it.
So yeah, it was, but that's why, like, EJ, like, EJ, I know who EJ is, I get who EJ is, but, like, Taylor, like, met EJ and fell in love, like, what was it, her second episode or first? I mean, it was right away. No one knows who this girl is.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and what we had seen of her, we didn't like yet, and we were thinking, why would he be drawn to her? Neither actress, it didn't matter who was playing her.
Yeah,
why
that wasn't a thing on the actress
character.
You know, why would he be drawn to this person who, at that point, was very mousy and everything? You know, and I honestly didn't have a dog in the fight, really. I mean, I like certain things about different pairings that with him and everything. So I was kind of open to it. And I don't mean to belabor the point, but it is a classic example of how you can't put insert romance here and have it work.
Yep. And I think most of the shows are guilty of doing it. Like, I don't think it's just Days. It's, you know, it's all the culture now are guilty of, you know, they introduce a character and they say, we're bringing this person on as you know, this person's love interest, and they don't take the time to find out who that person is as a character first.
Right.
And, it's a shame.
Give
it's
people
shame.
Something to root for or against, even. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
I want to ask you about improvising. Do actors improvise anymore on the show? And does it drive you batty? Or you're like, oh, that was cool.
It depends on the actor. There are, unfortunately now, the way improvising used to work is that the actors would rehearse the scenes like 6, 7, 8 times before they went to tape. So in the course of rehearsing something 6, 7, 8 times, the actors would find like cool things to do with their hands or, you know, with the dialogue or whatever. Just in the constant repetition of doing it. And then it's great. What happens now is you get a lot of improvising because they only get one take. And
right.
So sometimes they screw up their line. And so the improvising isn't so much a, ooh, let's play here. The improvising is like, oh, God, we forgot our line. Quick, somebody fix it. And,
okay.
I was never a writer who ever got offended. I know Hunt Block, when I was on As the World Turns, Hunt Block and Liz Hubbard, you wouldn't even bother writing a dialogue for them. You would just say, here's what you have to get to, and just get to it by the end of the scene. And the two of them would, like, you know, they were, and that's, but they were such a joy to watch that you'd just sit back and be like, yeah, do your thing. Like, I'm having a blast here watching you. Go nuts. You know, then
cool
there are other actors. What's that?
You would just have been such a cool person to work with on a team like that. That's so neat because you're so open to things and you appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, yeah, not all teams are like that. Not all teams
are
like that at all.
I know.
But yeah, it's when you kind of get that magic moment when everybody's kind of working together and in sync and there's not a lot of egos and everybody's just trying to make the best product. And you know that no one's trying to step on your toes. They're just trying to make the show
right.
better. Then it's fantastic. And you can see, I think the fans can feel it on camera. I think the fans can tell when a show is going through a really great time behind the scenes and when it's going through a bad time behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You can just feel it.
Uh-huh. Very true. Very true.
Yes, I can see all the backstage drama. I mean, that has to be such a bummer on their performances. I mean, it seems like
well,
some of the shows, what's going on backstage is 1,000 times more interesting than we're watching.
Well,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think that's kind of a. I think that's kind. I don't know if it's as interesting, to be honest with you. It's. You know, it's like any office place drama, and I think it probably sounds more salacious than it really is. Mm. I think, you know, working at these shows, you spend like 14 hours a day in the studio with these people. And you spend every single day with them, and for better or worse, you're kind of their family. And you kind of... Because it's all creative jobs and because there's not a lot of time and because everybody's kind of, you know, rushing around like crazy, sometimes you don't have enough time to be nice to somebody. Sometimes you have to be short with them and be like, no, we just do it this way. Just do it. We got to get here by 6 o'clock. Are we going to overtime? And people's feelings get hurt or whatever. And then, you know, because you spend so much time together, sometimes people hook up at Christmas parties, just like any other job that you have. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like,
oh,
the same.
Tell. Like, for
it's
example,
it's no, never, never. But, like, it's the same, but it's like, no different than any other job I've ever had, really. It's just kind of magnified a little bit because we're all creative people. So, but I don't know if it's, I think it probably sounds more salacious on the blogs than it really is behind the scenes. Because for the most part, we're just trying to get through our day. And no matter what drama is going on, we're just looking at our clocks going, we have to shoot another 32 scenes in 3 hours. Like, sorry for your drama. We got to go to tape right now. Pull it together. And, you know, any professional actor or actress will pull it together. And then deal with whatever it is afterwards. But, yeah, I don't know if it's – I do think that the fans tend to get kind of a distorted message from the internet. And don't get me wrong, I was a blogger. Like, my friends, I have so many friends who are bloggers. I'm certainly not putting any blogger down, but I do think kind of this image that they painted is that it's much more, you know, that it's more like a day, it's more like Soap Dish, and it's not so much like Soap Dish.
You have to churn out a product, and it's, you know, time is literally money.
Yep.
And so you don't have a time for a lot of the BS, probably. I mean,
exactly.
I would imagine there's just no, you know, not a lot of time for that. And I would imagine the people that, if there are actors that do cause some of that, they probably aren't, you know, necessarily around for very long.
No, they don't last very long. They don't last very long. And that's exactly what happens. Yeah, and you just kind of roll with it. I mean, when I started working in soaps, there were certainly moments where I realized that these people that I watched my whole life growing up were actors and that they were very different from the characters they played, and there were a few shocking moments I had trying to come to terms with that. And then once I came to terms with it, I was like, oh, this is just like any other job I've ever had. Like, it's no different. Like, it's just that these are just people. They're just human beings, and they're weird and they're quirky, and some of them are annoying and some of them are cool, and you just kind of take the good with the bad and try to get through your day and get home to your loved ones. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And some days everybody is like on the same page, and you love everybody, and you think, I can't imagine working with a better group of people. You know, it's 10 o'clock at night, and you're opening a bottle of champagne in the production office because you just got done taping The Wedding from Hell, and you're like, you know, we rock. We're amazing. And then there are other days where you just, like, storm out at 6 p.m., and you're like, I hate everybody. No one knows what they're doing. I don't have time for this bullshit. and everybody's like that, and everybody has different days. It's
of course.
But it's show business. It's what, you know, it's just weird and crazy, and yeah.
And you
and
love
just
it.
Kinda, and I love it. I love it. It's I had such an amazing time in daytime. Even the times I look back and I was most miserable, I look back now and I'm like, man, like, you know, who gets a chance to be that miserable in that kind of environment, you know, on that show? It's, you know, like, it's just a cool thing.
I'm glad
thing.
To have full perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
So. Are there any more questions? Again, I feel like I'm rambling. Are there any more, like, do you guys
no,
think
I love
questions?
It.
You said you started watching Days back in 1983. Of course, no, that was the time before spoilers and stuff. And I was watching back then, and the whole Slasher storyline and when Tony was revealed in the basement and all that. Of course, didn't know anything beforehand. How do you feel about spoilers now? It comes out and
I hate them,
kind of know
personally.
What's happening.
It was so much more exciting
not to know what was happening, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I've had you know, discussions with fans online about this, because a lot of fans say to me, a lot of the younger fans always say to me, like, no, spoilers don't mean anything, like, I'll still watch the show even if I know what's going to happen, but God, I really do think it takes away from everything, like, I would get aggravated when spoilers. I get that, like, because Soap Digest and Soap Weekly started releasing, like, a week in advance, 2 weeks in advance, that's fine. I've learned to kind of accept that, which when things get out, like, 3 months in advance, that it really upsets me. Because, and here's the other thing, and I always say this about the YNR Day Ahead spoilers, and I think Days are the same way. In Canada, there's a day earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what used to drive me nuts about those is that people would post summaries of what happens, and they would write something like, you know, Sammy yells at EJ about what happened with Little Johnny. And that's what they write in their summary. Now, meanwhile, it could have been a Carolyn Collison script and be the most brilliantly written explosion that Sammy's ever said and would make you, like, stand up and cheer. But somebody reads online, Sammy yells at EJ, and the response is, ugh, again, I'm totally skipping that episode. I've already seen her yell a million times. And I understand, because when they write a line like that, you know, I wouldn't want to watch it either. But, like,
you
that's what annoys me about spoilers, is that, you know, people read something and they're like, oh, this is something I've seen a million times. And you know what? Maybe it is something you've seen a million times. Maybe it will be a crappy episode, but maybe it won't be. Maybe it will be a brilliantly written episode, and you just, you know, and you're going to miss it. And that's a bummer to me, because I know, like I said, there are scriptwriters who pour their hearts and souls into some of these episodes that they know aren't, like, you know, Emmy shows, but they want to make them Emmy shows,
if that
makes sense. I was once told, write every episode like it's going to be your Emmy show.
Wow.
Have your shows been an Emmy contention? Have they picked your episodes?
The only time that happened was the second Emmy at World Turns. One of them was mine, which was very cool. It was with the episode where Brian Montgomery had just died. And as the world turns, and it was Craig over his body, and everybody was finding out at the hospital, and it was, you know, it was a sad episode. But that was back when we used to submit two episodes. I really miss those days. You used to be able to submit two episodes, and so, like, the 2 years we won at World Turns, one episode would be, like, this really, like, angst-ridden, tragic episode, and the second one would always be this kind of high style, you know, very stylized kind of, I don't want to say camp. Camp is the wrong word, but something a little more, like, you know, energetic, because that shows a range. And I think now that we're only submitting one episode, people are just submitting, like, their quote-unquote Emmy show, and you don't get a feel for what the range of the show is.
Exactly.
You know, anybody can write an Emmy show and submit it, but if you're, like, garbage the rest of the year, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It happened this year.
So yeah, that was the one time that that was one of my episodes that was submitted, and that was very cool. That's why that one probably means the most to me. The first one was cool just because it was the first one. One's at my parents. I gave my first one to my parents, so they have it in Florida. The second one is here in the hallway in my apartment, and the third one I haven't received yet. They are mailing it to me, so I'm not sure where I'm going to put that. My partner wants to put it in the bathroom.
So
it may end up in the bathroom.
That could be dangerous.
It may end up in the bathroom. Yeah, it's so weird. I can't believe I have three of them. It's so bizarre.
That's cool.
It's so surreal. It's, you know, I tell everybody that the morning after I won the first one, I cleaned my toilet. I spent all morning cleaning my toilet because I just had to feel like normal, because it just didn't feel normal having a statue in my hand.
Oh, that's great.
So I was like, I need to do something like completely mundane. I need to clean the toilet or something. I just was. It was all that. I might have also still been drunk. So like.
Yeah. So you
like
don't have
some
an
people
ego
go to
problem,
Disneyland.
No.
You're like,
no.
What are you gonna do after your Emmy? I'm going to clean my toilet.
I'm gonna clean my toilet. It totally was like that. It was totally like that. So.
Oh, funny.
Well, yeah, because I was young. I was 25, and winning an Emmy was something I dreamed of doing it when I was like 45 or 50 years old. Like to have it kind of happen to you when you're 25, you don't expect it. You're like, what just happened? I did what?
What
like,
a great feeling,
yeah.
Though, to realize, truly realize what your childhood dream had been. I mean, that
it is.
It
is, but it's terrifying at the same time because I growing up and going through high school and through college, I had this dream and I kind of pictured this is the goal I want to reach in my life. And I kind of hit my goal by the time I was 30, which is wonderful. And I'm still not complaining about that. But then you kind of get hit with this wave of panic. Like, okay, you did it. Like, now what? Because you didn't plan on doing it. You didn't plan on doing it this soon. I admit, I worked my ass off. I worked really hard. But I did, step into some lucky situations. I fully, fess up to that. So when you kind of get hit with this panic of like, oh, God, like, what are you going to do with the rest of your life?
Right.
So, yeah, I went through a few really tough years, like in my early 30s, where I just was like, I don't know what
like,
I'm doing anymore.
Like, early and this is it?
And this is it. You really go through that. And again, I don't want people to think I'm like complaining about my 20s.
No,
God knows
no.
I'm a blessed guy. I'm a really blessed guy. But like, there is another side to the coin that happens after the fact. And you're like, oh, crap.
Sure.
Like, I don't know what I'm doing right now. Now I look back and it was such an amazing experience. And I can't say enough good things about it.
How cool is that? Your parents get to have that in their home, and
they love it. They show it off to everybody. They to everyone.
I love it.
They love that.
That's neat. See, you want enough that you've got several different places that you can put them.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so strange.
Now, am I correct that you also did some acting? Did I find that? In 1989?
Really.
You played Tom?
I can't believe you just dug this up. Here's how...
Well,
okay, you
some research.
You want to know this story? This is actually a really fun story. And I'm telling everybody, whatever you do not rent it. And I'm not saying that because I'm embarrassed. I'm saying it. You just don't want to watch it. It's unwatchable. What happened was, you guys will know this. Like, in the middle 80s when VCRs became a household item and all these video stores started popping up everywhere, there weren't a lot of movies on videotape to rent or to buy. Like, there were all these stores opening up, but they were really, stores were desperate for these movies, for any movies to rent on videotape. And so there was a guy who lived in my hometown who had just graduated from NYU. I was 11 or 12. And he had just graduated from NYU. I moved back home to his parents. And he literally was writing scripts and shooting movies with his big, huge VCR home video camera. No lighting, no lighting. No. The music was done on a Casio keyboard. Completely, there's no editing machines. He edited the whole thing with two VCRs. And so he was making these movies and basically selling them to video stores to rent out. And he didn't make any money off of it. I think he kind of broke even at the end. But it was kind of cool for, like, a film student in, you know, 1987, 88, 89 to kind of do this. So he saw me in a children's play, and he asked me to be in this movie called Woodchipper Massacre. And it was me and a girl who was in the play. He played my big brother, and his mother played my great aunt. And I would go to his house every day after school. There was like 8 of us who were in the movie, and we would go to his house every day after school, and we would shoot a scene from the movie. I did this for like 3 months, and I had so much fun. Because when you're 11, 12 years old, you have no concept. Mm-hmm. And even when the movie came out, like, I had no concept that it was done on like a VCR camera, that it looked any different from any regular movie. It was all very like, I mean, you can tell, you look at it now and it looks like a home movie. I mean, that's how cheaply made it is. But I had such a blast on it. And it's so funny because the guy who did it tracked me down about, 5 years ago, because it was being released on DVD, and he wanted me to shoot like a Where Are They Now thing for the DVD.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was very honest with him. Like, as cheesy and awful as it is, like, he was kind of my inspiration for going to New York and, like, trying and starting to knock on doors and getting into my first internship at a soap opera, because here was a guy who came home from college because he couldn't afford to keep living in New York City. All he wanted to do was write and direct movies, and he did. And it didn't matter that they were terrible, but he did it. And he worked with here was this 22-year-old working with, you know, adults who were older than him and kids that were younger than him, and making them all come to his house every day and saying, you know, just do this for me. We're going to have fun. Just, you know. And we all had a blast. We had such a good time. It was a great family to hang out with. And so yes, that was my brief foray into acting, which is for Massacre.
And that was it, huh? That's the
and
only credit
Tom?
I could find.
I played Tom. Oh yeah, we all had our own names. Yes, the girl Denise was played by a girl named Denise, and the girl John was. Oh yes, we all had our own names.
That way you knew you were up. If somebody said
exactly. Tom. Exactly.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yes, I had asked about that, so.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm glad. Because every once in a while, somebody will some soap fan will write me, and they'll be like, do you know there's another Tom Cassiello who did a horror movie in 1989? And I'm like, oh, is there? I had no idea.
What if they're related? Maybe a long-lost cousin.
Yeah, and what's really strange is there are people who, like, collect these kind of, like, you know, B-C-grade direct-to-VHS horror movies from the 80s. Like, they're, like, cult classics. And I've actually gotten, like, Facebook friend requests from people who I think are, like, soap fans. And they're like, are you the same Tom Castiello who was in Woodchipper Massacre? And I'm like, really? Are you kidding me? Like, seriously? Okay, sure. Yes, I am. Like, yeah, it's...
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, there's not too many of them. But every once in a while, I get a request, like, are you the same guy?
Funny. Do you turn them into the authorities?
I know, right? It's so, like, so wild.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
Did your friend make any money off this movie?
No, nothing at all.
Nothing.
No, and there was no. I mean, I don't think anybody's making any money off of it. I don't want to make it sound like I got cheated or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy made it all out of his own pocket, and then I think kind of regrouped his losses from video stores. And the DVD is probably. I mean, it's in like $1.99 bin. I mean, it's no one made any money, and we knew that going into it. It was just kind of for the fun experience of the whole thing. And being able to, I mean, I was like 11 years old and got covered in fake blood and stuff. Like, that was fun. Like, it was fun to be covered in fake blood at 11. And I got to stab my aunt, and we had a retractable knife. And I remember, like, we had to do the scene where I stabbed her like 5 or 6 times. And I'm 11 years old. Like, I had a blast. I was like, I get to stab you with this knife.
This explains a lot.
Heather in the chat room is saying the trailer's on YouTube.
Oh, I'm sure lots of it is on YouTube. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Oh, I've completely ignored the chat room. I'm sorry, guys. There's people in the chat room, and I haven't even, like, checked it yet. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. We watch it. Well, people are having fun in there. Lots of good comments.
Good. I'm glad.
Of course, Buzzworthy over there is being himself.
Oh, Novelle. Oh, Novelle.
Yeah.
Oh, he heard that. He's like, what did I do?
But that's, I have to say, like, not to like get all deep or anything, but like that was so much of why I wanted to kind of reach out to fans online and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody was like,
mm-hmm.
It's about self-promotion or whatever. And it really wasn't about self-promotion. It's about laughter like this. It's about connecting. It's about the fact that we all are kind of in this crazy, nutty industry together. And,
right.
With the exception of a few bad eggs, we're all really trying to make it the best we possibly can. I know it doesn't always seem like that, but, like, I really appreciate moments like these where we're all just kind of sitting around laughing. And it's like, you know what? Like, we're all just people. We all love this. We all want to keep it going. There was so much, like, screaming on both sides of things. I hear so much from the executives about, like, these damn internet fans, the crazy internet fans. There'd be so much on the internet about, like, these damn hacks. And I'm like, there's just so much anger. And, like, for the most part, most of us are these middle of the road. Like, we just want it to be good and entertaining, and we want to laugh, we want to cry, we just want to have a good time.
Right.
And, like, being able to talk to you guys, even now that I've left the industry, and being able to still talk to you guys and laugh and have a good time, like, this is what it's all about. Like, this is what soaps do. They create this community, and I think it's phenomenal.
It does.
I love being a part of it, even though I'm not working in it anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so great. I love it.
Yeah, so on that positive note, I think it's time to end the show.
Oh, yeah, I've probably babbled for too long.
Yeah.
That went fast.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I had a blast. I had such a good time, and I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, you're fantastic. I seriously could listen to you for... I'll be stalking you on Twitter again,
Yeah, absolutely. Write me on Twitter. Anybody who's listening, write me on Twitter. I love talking to people, and, I'm not into the whole, like, dirt gossiping thing. That's not my world, but, I'm happy to talk shop and talk about soaps, and, yeah.
It's great. You've been great. We've enjoyed it. I know I've enjoyed it.
You guys are awesome. Oh, and I've been following your blog for a long time, too. I love it. Like, I think it's great.
Oh, down.
Yeah, I've been following. I've been going back we had a common foe, so that was how I discovered your blog.
I know. We've been doing this show for an hour and 35 minutes yet, and his name hasn't come up. So
that's fine. Oh. It doesn't have to anymore. It never has to again, and that's the wonderful thing. It never has to come up again.
Yes.
So.
Yes,
to even bring it up. But yeah, I've been following your blog for years, and I've loved it. I think it's great, and I love that there's people supporting Dave out there still. And I know it's gone through some rough times the last few years, but it's great to see people supporting it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, seriously, he was like actually a negative inspiration for me to start the blog. Because he was pissing me off so much. I'm like, damn it, I'm going to start my own blog. Seriously, yeah, he actually did inspire me to do my own blog. So
And you're still here, so.
I'm still here, and I'm interviewing people. So I mean,
exactly.
I'm interviewing more people from Dave than he has.
I love that. Tom, by the way, I enjoyed your tweets regarding that particular subject.
I kind of wanted to stay out of it, but you reach a point where you're I'm going to have a conversation about this because it's just icky stuff, but there's so many people that you guys don't even know about that have been hurt behind the scenes over the years, people in other jobs at the shows besides actors and writers, people at smaller jobs at the shows who have been affected by some of that bad stuff. And it's watching so many people get hurt over the years, especially because it's just unnecessary. It's what I was saying before. It's, all the anger and the vitriol and the back and forth. It's like we're all just trying to save this genre and we're all just trying to enjoy it and find some common ground and figure out what's going to make this work. And anybody who kind of adds that kind of venom into everything, this is not the time for it. It's just not.
Nope. Right.
It's so counterproductive. Yeah. It's so counterproductive to everything that we're trying to do right now. And I do want to say, as much as, people are frustrated with their soaps and their head writers and executive producers, like, there isn't one head writer right now in the business, believe it or not. Hold on. I'm going to actually go through the list. No, right now there is not one head writer working who is not like, I want to save this, I need to save this, I love this show. Every single head writer working right now is an incredibly huge soap fan. I know there are people out there who won't believe that, but it is so, so, so true. They have been watching soaps forever and they want to save them. Are they always going to make the right decisions? No, probably not, but I'm telling you, like, the people are fighting, man. I mean, you don't know they're fighting, but they are fighting.
Well, I got a sense that Ken Corday was really, I mean, I'm not always a fan of his. In fact, I've been rather angry at him at times. But I have to admit, he really did kind of take a stand, and I really felt like he was trying to save the show. You know, I mean, after driving it off a cliff, but hey, you know.
I think he
owns the show too, right? So that's
Right.
So I've never doubted, even, you know, even the night that Ken fired our entire team during the swag, which is probably when I disliked the man the most, I never once for a second was out of it. He didn't love this show with all of his heart.
Right.
This is his parents' legacy. Yeah. And you know, sometimes love leads you to make the wrong decision, you know.
Right.
But he loves this show. I've never said that he hasn't ever in any interview ever given. Like, I know for a fact that he wants this to keep going. The Bells want their shows to keep going, and you know, I know everybody at GH, you know, wants it to keep going, and it's a tough time we're in right now. But it's, you know, I don't want people to think that there aren't people really working hard behind the scenes, because they are.
Yeah. Mhm. That's my feeling. Well,
just because they're not Facebooking and tweeting doesn't mean they're not like working their asses off. Yes,
right. Nah. Well, gosh, you just have such a wealth of knowledge and history. It's just so fun to.
I don't want to bore people, but I'd love to come on again when things calm down. Next time I have a week off, I'll pop back on again.
Definitely. Yeah. We love you.
Please.
We would definitely love to hear from you again.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. And thank you to everybody listening in the chat rooms. This has been awesome. And I'll talk to you guys online.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
thanks.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.